MMA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network is brought to you by BetQL. BetQL is your home for the info you need to make yourself a smarter better. NBA, college basketball, and the NHL, they've got you covered. Just go to BetQL.com, promo code SGP30. That's BetQL.com, promo code SGP30 for 30% off. We're also brought to you by Better Than Vegas. Better Than Vegas is the home for the avid sports bettors, providing insights, analysis, and free betting picks. Better Than Vegas, it's like YouTube for sports betting. Make sure to subscribe to our page so you don't miss a pick at sportsgamblingpodcast.com/BTV. That's sportsgamblingpodcast.com/BTV. And finally, we're also brought to you by Better Edge. Better Edge is like a stock exchange for sports bets, allowing you to buy and sell betting positions like a stock market. The best part is it allows you to bet with no VIG. That's right, no VIG betting that's legal in 40 states. Sign up at betteredge.com, promo code SGP for a free $10 bet. That's BETTOREDGE.com, promo code SGP.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the MMA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network. We are up to episode 18, I believe. Our little baby's growing up on us, old enough to vote, I guess, now, and go to war and go to bars, and if our podcast lives in Quebec. But enough of that. I'm your host, Jeff Fox, as I have been every week, and I've been Jeff Fox ever since I was born, actually. True story there. Other than hosting this podcast, I am a writer and editor at our home base, the sportsgamblingpodcast.com. I also run MMA-manifesto.com. And I'm going to gloat a little bit, but not yet, because I actually had a good week for picks for a change. But first, I will introduce you to my partner in crime here. He hosts the Top Turtle MMA podcast, as well as the Prelim Picker podcast. He also writes for MMA-manifesto.com and for the sportsgamblingpodcast.com. He basically follows me around. Wherever I go, he follows. So that's just the way it goes. So that's he's like my kid, my little kid brother or something like that. An online commenter suggested that he actually retires because his picks are so bad. I'm hoping he doesn't follow that advice, but I am speaking of course, Daniel Gumby Vreeland. Hello.
Yeah, they're brutal to me, but again, I was mediocre, and I will say we are the mediocre boys. So if you went above and beyond being mediocre this week, I actually suggest that you retire.
I went 6-2, which is definitely not mediocre whatsoever, and actually made money for a change. And Dan went 4-4, which is that's the epitome of being mediocre. He lost money as per usual. We both hit on a juicy +160 dog, though, which was nice. Thiago Moises. And that was one of the ones I gave you on my video on, what's that say? Better Than Vegas, one of our lovely sponsors. I gave you that pick there. I think all my picks actually on that video paid off, except for the Montana De La Rosa Silva fight, because that one ended up being a draw. But yes, I ended up going 6-2, and Dan was 4-4. So for the year, I'm still not doing so hot. 34-39, 47%. Dan is 26-47, so he's above the a third now. You're at 36%. So if we're talking baseball, you're right in the top of the leaderboard for batting average. So
I'm a Hall of Famer downright.
Yeah, exactly. If you can keep that up for your career, 36%, you're definitely a Hall of Famer for sure.
I like to think I can do at least that good.
Mm-hmm. I'm still trying to get up to, 60 or 64 or whatever I was last year. I'm about, 10 missed fights from that mark this year. So it's not a huge amount, but we're gonna need some more 6-2 weeks coming up. So let's briefly break down last week's Gone versus Rozenstruik, or Rozenstruik versus Gone, I guess is how it was. It should have been the other way around based on the results, because we have a massive card to break down for this week coming up. So the main event, Dan swung for the fences with Yair Rozenstruik, which I thought was not a bad pick whatsoever, especially at +215. But he lost a very boring fight to Cyril Gain. I want to call him Gone. if he's French, his last name should be Gone. I took French all through school, all through high school, and if his name should be Cyril Gain in my books, but it's Cyril Gain apparently, or Gone. It's Gain. Everyone calls him, right?
I think it's Gain. I think it's Gain. Yeah. I'm pretty sure when I interviewed him last week, I'm pretty sure I called him three different things in the interview.
Yeah.
So I don't think necessarily he's all that picky about it.
Yeah, I'm telling you, it should be Gone. But regardless, he's being criticized a bit, but he basically fought smart and he got the biggest win of his career. So it doesn't matter what any of us says. It probably matters a bit what Dana White says. He didn't seem too impressed. But if you want to pay people double their money if they win, then you're going to get performances like that sometimes because people don't want to give up half their money. And he basically said that.
Yeah, and I will say this too. I'm kind of surprised that the people out there who are criticizing it were surprised that he fought that way. Because part of, if you listen to our breakdown last week, that's part of why I liked Rozenstruik, right? Because he swings for the fences. Granted, he didn't so much in this fight. Like he was clearly scared off or he couldn't find his entries or whatever it was. But he goes for it, right? And that's not what Gain does, right? Like, Gain repeatedly is the type of fighter who is a safe, technical type of fighter. Well, I mean, look at his fight with Tanner Boser. Like, he just picked away at Tanner Boser and didn't finish him. And, like, if you're talking about him being one of the top – now we're talking about him being one of the top three or four heavyweights in the world, right? He's probably just behind the Derek Lewis, Francis Ngannou, Stipe Miocic level. He's right there as, like, number four. He is still not a guy who chases knockouts, right? Like, he is the epitome of the opposite end of that spectrum. So I'm not surprised he fought that way. I'm not surprised that he's not going to go out there and swing wildly with Yair Rozenstruik, being that he didn't even with Tanner Boser. And like, yeah, some people were like, well, then he could have used his ground game because he's shown he's had a good ground game. Yeah, he showed he had a good ground game against two guys who had no idea what they were doing on the ground. No offense to Dontayle Mays. That heel hook looked like he was grabbing his leg, and Dontayle Mays was like, I don't know what he's going to do with that, but let's find out. And the other guy was just like fell into an arm triangle. So I'm not sold on his ground game, but I do think that this like technician type style on the feet works, is smart, doesn't risk getting him knocked out. And like, I wasn't surprised that this is the way he won.
No, of course not. And why would you rush into a guy like Rozenstruik who can put your lights out when you have a size and reach advantage on him? Then you should fight exactly the way you fought. If there's going to be any criticism, probably should go to Biggie Boy, who did not basically engage at all during the fight. His takedown defense looked decent, but other than that, I don't know what else you can really say that was on point for him.
Yeah, and in retrospect, too, this isn't the first time we saw this out of him, right? Like, a similar thing happened in that Overeem fight where he looked a little tentative and was getting picked apart from the outside. And eventually, like, he let go and found his opening and launched it with a few seconds left. But it just seemed like, you know, Gain being a little bit more technical maybe than Overeem and a little bit safer than Overeem, especially in the waning moments, I think maybe he just never found that opening. So, I guess, too, even though I did think he was going to find the opening and I did think he was going to land the big bomb, like, maybe this isn't the most surprising of outcomes.
No, probably not. So anyhow, but I think we've agreed that Rozenstruik is a hashtag chunky guy.
I think he's a chunky guy, especially given, shout out to my wife, for pointing out too, that, in her words specifically, he has a donk because those shorts were probably a little too small for him.
Without questions. So where do you think the big Frenchman goes next? Cyril, who does he fight next?
I think this is pretty obviously set up for him to fight Derek Lewis next.
Right.
As much as Derek Lewis really impressed into Dana White and to a lot of other people, Cyril didn't. The fact of the matter is both of them are pretty damn close to being able to say that they have a legitimate claim for the title. And would there not be John Jones waiting in the wing for the winner of Francis Ngannou and Stipe? You would probably say one of them already has it. But in the meantime, we're talking about two title fights that are going to roll around with neither of these two getting them. So we got to imagine both of them need one more win. Or, you know, if either of them decides that they're going to sit and wait and see what happens, the other one is going to pick up a win and look better. So I think the only logical thing is to book that as a headliner sometime in, you know, the next 3 months or something like that. And then just the winner of that versus the winner of John Jones and the champ just makes all the sense in the world, I think.
Yep. But would we not would Gain versus Lewis not basically be almost a replay of Gain versus Rozenstruik? Lewis is obviously more aggressive, but I could see it playing out exactly the same way.
I could see it playing out that way. I can also see it playing out like Derek Lewis versus Francis Ngannou too, because like they kind of pump faked each other for 15 minutes as well. I think booking it in a 5-round fight eliminates the chances that Lewis doesn't pull the trigger a couple of times. Like I think ultimately he's going to be less tentative than Rozenstruik, especially given what's on the line for him now. Like he knows how close he is to getting that elusive second. There's not a lot of guys in the heavyweight division who've worked their way back to a second shot at the title after missing on the first one. So he knows how close he is to that. He knows that he's got that right in his pocket, especially if he keeps cutting interviews that people laugh at. So I think you would see him aggressive enough to hurt. And I think also, too, a performance like this, people having just watched Cyril Gain, I don't think a lot of people are going to be afraid of his big power. I think he's got some power, but I think, too, you would see Lewis be more aggressive because he's not real worried about what can happen to him.
Yep, it's true. It's true. He's fought far bigger hitters than Gain if those two do end up matching up down the road. And I agree with you. That's basically the only thing that makes sense at this point for the division, for the two of them. Really not much else to speak of on the fight card. We had, seven decision victories.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
one decision, not victory.
one decision, not victory. We have a draw. We had a draw. So basically eight fights went to decision. One fight, Ronnie Lawrence, who looked very good against Vince Cachero. We whiffed on that one. I think that's one that Dan got told off about online. he looked very good. He won by TKO. The rest of the night was decisions. I didn't find it really boring. I guess I'm a fan, though. But none of the fights really dragged or anything. But we had a bunch of decisions. We hit on Tiago Moises, who looked very good against Alexander Hernandez, which we both were not surprised about whatsoever, right?
I'm not surprised at all that he won, but I am a little bit surprised in watching it how he won. Because I thought for sure we would see him start to grapple if he had any trouble, or even just to keep Hernandez on his toes. And correct me if I'm wrong, because I haven't gone back and watched it, or I haven't looked at any stats on it or anything like that, but I'm not sure he even attempted a takedown.
I don't think so.
And if he didn't, what a baller game plan that is for Tiago Moises to go in and just absolutely dominate and outstrike a striker. I also think it's worth noting, too, how dangerous Moises is and how possibly we're looking at a big run in the division here, because he's got wins over Michael Johnson, Bobby Green, and Alexander Hernandez, three guys who've been in the top 15 at some point in time in their career. He's looked amazing against all of them, and he's only 25 years old, which I think people forget, too. I sort of lump him in with like guys like Benil Dariush is like jiu-jitsu experts from Brazil, and I think that they're all magically 36 years old. And he's kind of like a refreshing young guy for this division.
Definitely, and he was very confident, even cocky on his feet. Looking at the stats, he officially tried one takedown, it says. He was 0-for-1, and he landed three more strikes than Hernandez. But it sounds closer than it was. He clearly won the fight, and I don't think he was in any risk of losing it via decision at all.
Hernandez tends to disagree with your assessment. Shocked. Yeah.
That's one of my pet peeves is fighters who clearly lose fights and they have a meltdown when the decision's read out that they lost.
Did you see his coach ask Bruce Buffer if he read the card wrong?
No, I didn't see that. Oh, yeah.
He asked him if they read the card wrong.
So it wasn't just a heat of Hernandez was heat of battle and he doesn't really know who's winning. It was, okay. Well, that doesn't speak well for his future if they can't see fights clearly for what actually happens in it. I was punished again for committing treason. Alexis Davis got a win, a very impressive win over Sabina Mazo. Other than that, really, like I said, not much to talk about on the night. It was, you know, it was fine. A fine card to watch. We only ended up with 9 fights because COVID and all that pandemic nonsense. But yeah, it was a decent night. It was a good night for me for picks. And Dan will take a 4-for-4. He considers that a win at this point, I think, right?
Yeah, and it was pretty. I'm sure you got the official numbers because I know the lines changed. We get a little bit closer, and you mark down the lines when we record. But I actually think I was probably pretty close to even too, because a lot of my wins were close to even money wins. Plus I had the underdog. We're probably getting close there. I do also, you know, just quickly before we move on to the other card too, you said not a ton more to mention. I do want to mention Pedro Munhoz with the calf kicks was just
a pleasure
to watch. And I got that one wrong. I love Jimmy Rivera. I'm a big fan. He's talking about going back to 145 or going up to 145 next,
right,
which might be an interesting move for him. But you know, just the calf kicks continue to be like this narrative in MMA right now. And man, did Pedro Munhoz, you know, extend that narrative a little bit further.
Yeah, that was very, very impressive. I will admit I flipped on a couple of my picks for my online column. I flipped to Rivera and I flipped to De La Rosa. So one of those bit me. Because you know, doing more research and like, I think Rivera's gonna win, but haha, I didn't say that in the podcast, so that's a win for me, haha. And then I was thinking De La Rosa was the superior striker, even though her face clearly did not show that last night. That one turned out to be a wash anyway, because it was a draw. So we'll put that one in the books. And for the record, you were down $105 last night if you bet 100 in every fight, Dan. So close, but no cigar.
Not too bad, though.
No, not horrible. Now, we have a massive fight card coming up this week with like massive in quality and massive in quantity. So we should probably dive into that, or we're going to be here all day. First, let's tell you about one of our sponsors, BetQL. You want to get an advantage over the sportsbook when it comes to betting? Obviously, you do. So you need to download BetQL, the only app you'll need to make smart bets. BetQL has sharp data on college basketball, NBA, and the NHL. So if you want an inside edge for who the props are backing, you need to check out BetQL. I was peeking at it today, and I see they have my Phoenix Suns listed as a lock to win their next game, so I appreciate that. They have tons of sportsbook offers for your state. Make sure you head to the App Store or Google Play Store and download BetQL. Bet smarter, not harder. So head to betql.com, enter the code SGP30, and you get 30% off your first subscription. So promo code SGP30 at betql.com. All right. I haven't done the math yet. Over at MMA-manifesto.com, I have a formula that I rank fight cards as to the strength of it on paper based on how good the fighters are. I haven't done this one yet, but I'm assuming this one's going to be one of the highest ones I've ever ranked, because this has got 3 title fights on the card, 4 champions, because one of them is a champ versus champ fight, and then the undercard is stacked also. So we would be speaking of course, UFC 259, Blachowicz versus Adesanya, which is going to be at the UFC Apex this Saturday, March the 6th. I always forget to check out the start times. Pay-per-view will be starting at 10 as per usual. The main prelim portion will be on ESPN, ESPN Plus at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern. And then the prelims will be on Fight Pass and ESPN Plus. One second. I'm guessing they're probably going to be starting around 6 or so. Usually that's when they start, 6:30. Here we go. But this will all change because a billion fights will fall off the card, I'm sure, before we actually get to the night. But anyhow, at this point, 6 o'clock. Yes, 6 o'clock is the early prelim portion, which is where we will start also. Let's start with some bantamweights. Mario Bautista, who will be taking this fight on short notice, versus Trevin Jones. It's actually very short notice. It was just announced on the 16th of February. So we're talking like, oh, that's a couple weeks. So maybe that's enough for him. Let's break down Trevin Jones first. He is, as a pro, 12-6, with 1 no contest. He's got 2 knockouts, 4 submissions. His UFC debut, he won via TKO, but then he got busted for weed. Apparently, they think that helps you knock people out, so that got changed to a no contest. He has an inch reach advantage over Batista. Grappling stats are in his favor, but it's a very small sample size. He's at plus 185 at this point. As for Batista, 8-1 as a pro, 3 knockouts, 3 submissions, so a fairly well-rounded dude. 2-1 in the UFC. He dropped his debut, but then he's won 2 straight. Like I said earlier, he's taking this on late notice. He is 2 inches taller, 3 years younger, and striking stats in his favor, which is still the number one predictor for who's going to win a fight. And he is at minus 225, which is another massive factor on picking who's going to win a fight. Favorites are, since 2020, starting in 2020, favorites are winning 67% of the time. I'm still giving out the height stat, but I just started tracking whether that actually has an advantage or a disadvantage or whatnot, has any effect at all on fights. I started tracking it 2021, and right now it's the shorter guy has been winning, but it's only 53% of the time. So I'm thinking that stat probably doesn't make much a difference. Reach is a little more important than height at this point, but I'll throw it out there at this point anyhow. So what do you think of this fight, Dan? You told me off air, I got a sneak peek on your thoughts, but let's let all our lovely listeners hear too.
I'm going with Mario Bautista here. I'm first of all a big fan of him. I think people underrate him fairly heavily based on his debut. He took that fight on 6 days notice and fought Corey Sandhagen on the first ever fight on ESPN. So like the guy put himself in the highest pressure situation against who's, let's be honest, probably a future title challenger and maybe even a future champion in Corey Sandhagen. So I think the fact that people wrote him off after that is tough. He's coming off that knockout win over Miles Johns, which looked good. And I know, too, we've talked about on this podcast quite a bit that we try not to pick the guy on short notice because it's a dangerous fight for them. But I will also say that I got a sneak peek into his training camp and talking to him this week for the Top Turtle podcast. And he said that actually when two of his teammates are fighting on this card in both Casey Kenny and Kyler Phillips, when they went into training camp for their fights, he just decided he was going to pretend he had a fight. So like he has been in like a 6 to 8 week intensive training camp with two guys who are getting ready for fights at his same weight or right around his same weight. So like I think his training camp is probably a lot better. And in addition to that, let's go back and remember that win for Trevin Jones. The guy was pretty much out in the first round. If the ref had stopped it, nobody would have had any problem with him losing that fight. You know, obviously the comeback was impressive. He's very tough. He's got power in his hands. I just think Batista probably out-wrestles him here if he wants to, and I think he's a little sharper on the feet too.
Yeah, I was thinking Jones, but hearing that about his camp, the fact he's been training, and then when you look at who Batista's put away and who he's fought recently, I think he's the one to go with here. Not so positive about the minus 225, though. It seems a little high, especially with the late notice fight, don't you think?
Is that about right? That number definitely seems a little steep to me. I'd like to see it a little closer together, especially because of Trevin Jones having his full training camp as well, which he didn't have for his last fight. But I will say most of Trevin Jones' training camp has been for Randy Costa, who I like Randy Costa a lot, but a very different type of fighter than Mario Bautista. You know, big swinging guy who's going to go out there and pop with him, whereas Mario Bautista's got a sneaky good wrestling game. He can take people down. He's a little bit more of a grinder. So I think, too, the style change is going to be tricky for Trevin Jones if he had put a lot of stock into fighting what would have been a fight of the night looking fight against Randy Costa.
Right. And you should listen to us because prelims we usually do fairly good. That's why we give them pretty much even amount of time as we do the main card, because there's money to be made on the prelims. Just because they're not in the main event doesn't mean the money is any different. You can actually get an advantage if you know a bit about some of these unknown guys. So let's move on to lightweights. Euros Medic. I'm guessing it's Medic. Could be Medic, but I'm thinking, is it Medic?
I think it's Medic, but it's interesting to note too, because it does look like Medic, and if you look at his official nickname, I'm pretty sure it's the Doctor. So I think he's playing with that pronunciation a little bit.
Maybe. He's fighting one of the Cruises. There's 2 Cruises on the card, not related, but this is Alon Cruz. And like I said, I believe I said this will be lightweight. So let's start with Cruz. He is 8-3 as a pro, 2 knockouts, 2 submissions. he dropped his UFC debut. He got into the big show after winning on Dana White's Contender Series. He's been out of action since February of 2020. So we're talking about a year. He's been out. I'm just starting those stats, and it looks like inactive fighters have only been winning 44% of the time thus far. I haven't finished crunching the numbers yet for 2021, and I may go back to 2020. So it's looking like it is a bit of a disadvantage. Ring rust is a real thing, despite what the other crews on the card thinks. So, and he's got a crazy 7-inch reach advantage, which is nuts because he's an inch shorter than Medic. So that's something to keep in mind. He's plus 140. Dr. Medic, 6-0 as a pro, 4 knockouts, 2 submissions. So he's never gone to the distance in a fight, and he's never lost either. This will be his debut. He also is a Dana White Contender Series alum. He won his fight there. Like I said, he's an inch taller, 4 years younger. Striking stats in his favor, but we're talking small sample sizes for both these guys. One or two fights tops. He's up minus 170. I think I'm going to go with the doctor in this one.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Medic too. My reasoning is a lot of it is, first of all, I'm not very high on Ursus Medic. I think his lack of takedown defense and the way that he's got kind of like just wild aggression when he comes forward. He throws really nice combinations, but like they don't seem calculated all that much. And he gets countered. And if you've looked back on his regional circuit, he's gotten taken down quite a few times and wound up on his back. And, you know, he's fought back in all of those and won in all of those. But I think it's going to be a problem in the UFC. I just think the UFC gave him the perfect opponent here in Alon Cruz, who's a guy who has no interest in going to the ground with him. Has no wrestling really to speak of, you know, sort of fancies himself this like distant range sniper, and is also coming off of having been backed down by somebody with tons of aggression, right? Like if you look at his last fight against Spike Carlisle, he literally lost that same exact type of fight. He literally got backed down by a shorter guy with less reach who like swarmed him and overwhelmed him in just a minute and a half. So I think Medic follows that same exact game plan. I don't know if it ends as quick, but I expect Medic to be able to catch him here.
All right, there we go. Green once again. This is quite a matchup here. This card is it's another thing we talked about in our pre-production meeting, because we do lots of pre-production here, let me tell you. We're talking about how hard this card is to pick. And the betting line for this fight may not speak to that, but I think it's a tough one to pick here. And this would be a welterweight fight between Sean Brady and Jake Matthews. He's young, but he's been in the UFC forever. He is 17-4 as a pro, 4 knockouts, 7 submissions, but he's 10-4 in the UFC. So he's been around for ages. He's won 3 straight fights. He's won 6 of his last 7. Inch taller and an inch of reach in his advantage, and 2 years younger, despite all his experience. He is a younger man here. He's at plus 180. Brady is a perfect 13-0 as a pro, including 3-0 in the UFC. He's got 3 knockouts, 3 submissions, grappling stats in his favor. He's at minus 220. First off, do you think this number is a little wacky like I do, or do you think it's justified?
Well, I'm going to start with, yes, I think the number is wacky. And on that same token, that's why I'm taking Jake Matthews in this fight.
Yeah,
too.
Exactly.
I like Sean Brady a lot. I will say, I think the sky is kind of the limit for him in the UFC. He reminds me a lot of Jake Matthews as Jake Matthews came into the UFC, right? Like, he's very physical, very strong. He's got that stocky sort of build. And you almost look at him and you're like, that dude could probably out-wrestle so many people in this division, especially after what he did to Ismael Nariyev. But the problem is he's up against a guy who is sort of, I feel like, the kryptonite to that, right? Like, Jake Matthews is a very good wrestler in his own right. He is also incredibly physically strong, and I think he probably has the striking advantage here, too. For everybody out there who's like, oh, I don't know if he's got the wrestling to stop him, remember that Jake Matthews took down Li Jingliang twice, and like, fairly easily, too, and beat the hell out of him. So, like, this is a guy who's got, and especially as he's progressed in his career and has gotten older and sort of figured things out, this is a guy whose wrestling has looked phenomenal. The last time he conceded a takedown was in November of 2017. Like, he is going to give Sean Brady problems with the wrestling. And if that stalemates out, I definitely favor Jake Matthews in this fight, and that's kind of what I think is going to happen. This is going to stall out as a wrestling match. We might see some prolonged clinch exchanges, but I think Matthews might have the better gas tank and is probably going to look better on the feet. And granted, I will say, you know, like, if you look, Sean Brady's numbers are better as far as striking goes, but I think a lot of those get inflated with the amount of time he spends in positive grappling situations, either clinching against the cage or on the ground. He sort of inflates those numbers, right? You're going to see him land a bunch of significant strikes if he does get to those. I just don't think he's in those enough to beat somebody like Jake Matthews, who, you know, also has good submissions too.
Yep. No, he's and you look at his resume and how long he's been around, yet only 26, and he's out of Jackson Wink, so he's probably wrestling John Jones frequently, things like that. I think he's definitely worth a swing at this kind of money. Plus 180 is nice to me. So let's both back him. This actually could be a fight of the night. These two guys can go. So it's a good matchup. Let's go light heavyweights. Kennedy Enzechukwu versus Carlos Ullberg. Ullberg, actually, let's go with the harder to pronounce first. Enzechukwu, 7-1 as a pro, 4 knockouts. He lost his UFC debut, but then won his last fight. It took him 2 swings, 2 wins on the contender series, but it got him in into the big show after winning twice there. He's got an inch of height, six inches of reach, 2 years younger than Ullberg. Grappling stats are in his favor. Of note, he's been out since August of 2019, though. As for Ullberg, he's only had 3 pro fights, 2 knockouts. This will be his UFC debut. He is 1-0 on the contender series. That's what got him in here. Striking stats in his favor, but we're talking very small sample size. He's at minus 200. I don't really know too much. I probably watched that contender series fight, but I don't pay anything in this brain of mine. So what are you thinking of this matchup? Is Ullberg really worth the minus 200 after only 3 pro fights?
I actually think he is, and it's a shame because I like Zechukwu, and I just think the problem here is that if you go back and you look at that fight, that Zechukwu is coming off of a win over Darko Stojic. If I'm remembering it correctly, I'm pretty sure Zechukwu would have lost that fight if they didn't take 2 points away from Darko Stojic for like 37 dick kicks, which is, you know, like if that's your lone win in the UFC and it was 2 years ago, not a real great way to go. Stojic kind of put him up against the cage and you know, did what he needed to and would have done what he needed to had he not, you know, had points taken away. Zechukwu, I think, it has like a lot of room to grow. He's very gifted, and he's working with Fortis MMA. There's a lot of positives here. But, you know, like, if you go back and look at Ullberg, 3-0, kind of dangerous to pick a guy who's 3-0. He's also like 150-12 or something in kickboxing. So, like, at the same time, doesn't look like he has a lot of experience. He's got a ton of experience. He trains with Izzy. Like, there's so much to like about Ullberg here. And I think, too, at light heavyweight, Zechukwu is not a guy who's super hard to hit. So with a guy who's got crazy knockout power like Ullberg, I think Ullberg is the smart pick here, and I think he probably wins it pretty easily.
All right, let's go with Ullberg. Go with the chalk. And the prelim main event shows you how stacked this card is, because we got a fun flyweight one on the early prelim main event. Tim Elliott versus Jordan Espinosa. This right now is a pick'em fight. They're both at minus 115 as of this recording. Elliott is 16-11-1 as a pro, 3 knockouts, 6 submissions. Of note, he has lost 5 times via submission, so that's something to keep in mind. Espinosa has a lot of submission wins. He's 5-9 in the UFC. This is his second kick in the can at the UFC. He won his last fight. He lost his 3 straight before then, and he's only won 2 of his last 6. He is an inch taller. Grappling stats are in his favor. As for Espinosa, 15-8 and 1 no contest. 2 knockouts, 7 submissions. 2-3 in the UFC. He's only won 1 of his last 3 fights. He lost his last fight. He is a alum of Contender Series. He won his fight there. He's got 3 inches of reach, 3 years younger. like I said, this is both a this is a pick 'em fight. They're both at -115. I think you're going to take Espinoza in this one.
Yeah, I'm actually going to lean on Tim Elliott for this one. And the reason is sort of what you mentioned. You said Jordan Espinoza, a lot of submissions on his record. But if you look, he doesn't have one in the last nearly 4 years, 3.5 years since he last scored a submission. And if you look at his losses in the UFC too, a lot of them are him realizing he's outmatched on the feet, switching to his wrestling game, and getting subbed in his sort of desperation wrestling game, right? Like Alex Perez caught him in a triangle choke or an arm triangle choke. Matt Schnell caught him in a triangle choke. Both, you know, after him trying to take it to the ground, David Dvorak kind of like, you know, just out scrambled him, put him against the cage. You're looking at Tim Elliott, who maybe is one of the greatest scramblers the flyweight division has ever seen. And yes, does he have his problems with grappling? Absolutely. He's got that kind of like suffer be subbed mentality. But with that mentality, you know, he's going up against a guy who hasn't subbed a few times. And, you know, you mentioned he's got 2 submission losses in his last 4 fights. Those submission losses are to Brandon Royval and Davison Figueiredo, who might be 2 of the best guys in this division. So I got a lot of faith in Tim Elliott. That losing streak doesn't concern me as much as it does to other people. And granted, he did break it. He does have a win off over Ryan Benoit in his last fight. But I actually think he's probably going to out-scramble Jordan Espinoza, maybe even lock up a submission here. But if he doesn't, he scrambles enough to keep it on his feet. And he definitely, I think, has the striking advantage here.
I think we should note, I believe, for knowing you all these years, I believe you're a Tim Elliott mark, though, are you not?
Bit. I do really love Tim Elliott, but I will say I picked against him in the Royval fight because, well, then again, I am also a little bit of a Brandon Royval mark because I do enjoy him quite a bit. I do enjoy Raw Dog quite a bit. Great freaking nickname, by the way. I like Tim Elliott. I think, you know, I've always been sold on him. Maybe this is a better way to say it. Maybe I'm not like a super fan of him, but I have always been sold on how good he is based on how good he looked against Demetrius Johnson. I think that right, performance against Demetrius Johnson just shows how talented he is. And I actually think he's gotten better since then. So, you know, for the results not to be showing it, sure. But, like, I actually think, like I said, grappling losses notwithstanding, he's got a great grappling game. And I think I expect to see it come out against a guy who sometimes forgets that he needs to wrestle and do jiu-jitsu at the same time.
Right. And he's fought top of the division when you look at Elliott's record. But regardless, I'm going to go with Espinoza. I'll go with the younger, bigger guy. But that's good, but we have to have a couple things different. That way I can end up winning again this week. So that's the plan, at least. Let's tell you, before we go into the prelims, the main prelims, let's tell you about BetterThan.Vegas. We spoke about them earlier. BetterThan.Vegas is like YouTube, but it's for what hashtag the gens only care about, which would be sports betting. Best part is you can get free video pick from SGPN crew. I put up a video every week, and I actually gave winners last week. So it's always good to check out my picks and see that I haven't shaved and that I have had one haircut in the past year or so because everything's always locked down. Meanwhile, over on Top Turtle channel, I saw today Dan is looking fresh in his video. He's young and handsome, and he's not all beaten down by life like I am. But regardless, make sure you check out Top Turtle's videos too. I think – did you give them a winner or a loser? I'm trying to think.
I gave them a canceled fight. I took Cowboy Oliveira over Ramazan Kurumagomedov.
Which
of course never happened.
Yes, of course. So anyhow, make sure you check out the SGP page over there. And while you're there, you can check out Top Turtle too. So go to sportsgamblingpodcast.com/BTV and maybe subscribe to our channel. So that's sportsgamblingpodcast.com/BTV. All right. That was just the early prelims. That's a pretty pretty darn good fight lineup right there. Women's strawweights. Olivia Renata Souza versus Amanda Lemos. So we got a couple of Brazilians going at it here. Start with Souza. 14-2 as a pro. 2 knockouts, 8 submissions. She's never been finished in a fight. 3-1 in the UFC. Won her last fight, lost one before that. 4 years younger than Lemos. Lemos, 8-1-1 as a pro. 5 knockouts, 2 submissions. 2-1 in the UFC. She's dropped her debut, but won her last 2. an inch taller, 2 inches of reach. Of note, she used to be a bantamweight, 130, so basically two weight classes above this. One's at strawweight, and she used to fight at bantamweight. So we're talking 20-pound difference there. So you'd think she'd be the bigger one in this fight. She's at minus 185. This is another one of the ones I have a question mark up against, maybe based on the line or so. Do you have a definitive pick in this one?
Yeah, I feel pretty comfortable in Lemo. Since she's come down to strawweight, I think, first of all, twofold here. She's fought better competition than Livia Souza has. Like, if you look at Livia Souza, you know, I like Brianna Van Buren. We talked last week about how much I like Ashley Yoder, and we'll get a chance to break that fight down. But those two combined with Sarah Frota, who I think is particularly bad and no longer in the UFC, and Alex Chambers, who I think went like 1-13 in the UFC and kept getting chances, like, neither of those two are really high-level opponents. Meanwhile, Lemos is fighting, you know, Mizuki Inoue, who's really good, and Miranda Granger, who I've enjoyed her grappling, but just got, you know, rear naked choked in almost no time by Amanda Lemos. So, like, in addition to that, look at the grappling numbers. Amanda Lemos, takedown accuracy, 100%. She tries to take you down, you go down. Takedown defense, 100%. Somebody tries to take her down, they don't have a chance. And then you can say the same thing about Livia Souza, which, granted, you know, like, she got out-wrestled by Rihanna Van Buren for some of these numbers, but we're talking 44% and 40%. So, like, the grappling numbers heavily favor Lemos. And in addition to that, too, like, I just think if you look at Lemos's striking numbers, the output is incredibly higher, right? Like, she's throwing three times as many punches as Livia Souza does, and it's because she trusts her hands and she lands. Like, she landed 83 times on Mizuki Inoue, which is really no small feat, because Mizuki is a beast on the hands with her hands too. So, yeah, I like Lemos here, and even the number doesn't particularly scare me off. I'd obviously like to see it a little lower, but I'm pretty comfortable with Lemos here.
Yeah, I was I had a question mark, but she was the pick I had a question mark beside, so I'm going to go with her also. Now that you opened my eyes to a lot of these things and helped me pick right. I don't know why I'm going with a guy who's got 37% accuracy, but I guess that speaks of my my poor judgment in life. I think we may differ on this one. Let's see. Another flyweight bout, this is great. There's a lot of flyweights on this card, which I enjoy. And I know you do too. Cares for Shockwave Dave at Top Turtle Things. Flyweights are the way to go. Rogerio Bontorin versus another one of City Kickboxing, a.k.a. Israel Adesanya's gym, another one of his teammates on this card, Kai Kara France. They're definitely getting their money's worth, flying everybody over for one big card here. Let's start with Bontorin, 16-2 with one no contest, 3 knockouts, 11 submissions. That is of note, the submission number there. 2-1 in the UFC. He also is 1-0 on the Contender Series. He lost his last fight. That was a year ago, so he is he has been out of action for over a year at this point. He will be an inch taller than Cara France, unless Cara France has a growth spurt in the next couple of days. Grappling stats in his favor. He's a slight dog, plus 115. Kai Cara France, 21-9 with one no contest, 9 knockouts, 3 submissions. Of note, he's been subbed 3 times, so a third of his losses are via submission, including his last fight. He's 4-2 in the UFC and only 1-2 over his last 3 fights. 2 inches of reach. A year younger, minus 145. I think Bontorin is going to be one of the underdogs I'm going to roll the dice on in this one. I'm guessing you're going with Cara France. I think you're a fan of his.
I am also a fan of Kai Cara France, and I am going with him. Yep. You know, you mentioned again the submissions. It's worth noting, other than getting submitted by Brandon Royval, the last time he was submitted was by Mark Striegel, who is also a UFC fighter, and that was 6.5 years ago. So I do think he's progressed a little bit since then. I think he looks a little bit better since he got back to the UFC. And granted, he wasn't in the UFC the first time, but he was in the Ultimate Fighter. He got beat by Pantoja and eliminated from the show, and then they never extended him a contract. He went to China and fought a little bit in Australia, and then he got back to the UFC. He's looked phenomenal since then, with only losing to Royval and Moreno, who are both beasts. And I would say this too, like, if you're looking for the style that beats Kai Cara France, it's somebody who has adequate to above average striking, who also mixes up the grappling enough to keep you guessing. And I just don't think Bonterine falls into that enough. I think he's probably going to be outclassed and definitely slower than Kaikara France on the feet. And I'm not sure he's got like enough of that like wrestler submission mentality like Royval and like Marino to sort of throw Kaikara France off of his game. So yeah, you were right in predicting that I was going to go with Kaikara France. I think this is going to be a really exciting fight, but I ultimately think the striking advantage and the fact that Bonterine just isn't good enough to keep him on his toes is going to lead to Kaikara France running away with it, especially late.
Yeah, I like Kaikara France too, but I am going with the dog here. You got to roll the dice on a few of these, and I think this is one of the ones worth rolling the dice on. With a fight card this big, if we have 15, 16 fights, you're probably looking at five underdogs. So I'm not saying just swing wildly for the fences, but if you like a dog that if you think a dog is worthy of your money, then definitely take it. Like there could be up to five or so underdogs coming through here, based on stats at least. Let's go with another flyweight fight. This is another crazy that this is on the undercard. Joseph Benavidez versus Askar Askarov. We will start with Benavidez. Joe B is 28-7 as a pro, 8 knockouts, 9 submissions, 15-5 in the UFC. He's lost the last two fights, but they're both to the champion, Davison Figueiredo. He won three. Before that, he won three straight to get himself into the title contention once again. He's basically been a perennial contender ever since he's been in the UFC, and he basically was when he was in WEC back in the day, too. WEC never die. He's minus 110. Askar Askarov, 12-0-1 as a pro, so he's got one draw. That's basically the only blemish on his record. 3 knockouts, 7 submissions. He's 2-0-1 in the UFC. He's won 2 straight fights after drawing in his debut. 2 inches taller, 2 inches of reach, 8 years younger. Slight favorite, minus 120. Of note, he is a deaf athlete. A deaf athlete, but doesn't seem to slow him down, even though he cannot hear his corner. He's made himself into a top level elite athlete, so kudos to that. So I will be taking him in this one. I hate to pick against Joe B, but I'll be going with him, and I like that it's only around minus 120 or so.
And we're going to differ on back-to-back flyweight fights.
Okay.
I'm actually going to take Benavidez, and it's weird too, because I think I've probably been a bigger Benavidez naysayer than a lot of people. I constantly think the up-and-comer is going to come in and knock him off, or the up-and-comer is going to come in and prove themselves by beating gatekeeper Benavidez only to have him win his 7th or 8th title shot. And in the meantime, you know, he's proven me wrong, and instead I'm going to go with him here, especially because, you know, as time goes on, you mentioned he's a slight underdog right now. That number will probably move a little bit more towards getting near, you know, plus money even. And I think the interesting thing for me here is that I just think Askarov is too committed to that wrestling game to really, really give Benavidez too much trouble, right? Like, because, you know, if you look at the guys who have beaten Benavidez, which granted, he has 7 losses on his record, they are to a grand total of 4 people. You know, it's Figueiredo, Dominic Cruz, it's Mighty Mouse Johnson, and one weird blip to Sergio Pettis by split decision. So, like, they're the best guys in the world, right? And they're guys who do a phenomenal job of striking, keeping you unaware, and then wrestling you up. With the exception of, obviously, Figueiredo, who just popped him real hard twice in both fights, Benavidez is a guy who doesn't really get out-wrestled unless you're, like, the best of the best and you're mixing things together. And Askarov, I feel like his game plan is a little bit too one-dimensional. You look at that fight with Pantoja. Pantoja kept him off him for quite a bit of time. And even when he went down, he was close to subbing him. And not for anything either, just, you know, as a commentary point, Askarov has kind of a crappy gas tank. I've never been impressed with his cardio. You look at that fight with Brandon Moreno, a lot of people had him losing that last round 10-8 after, you know, doing pretty well in the early parts because he just was so tired and so beat. In that fight with Pantoja, both rounds, he ended with his back getting taken because it looked like either he gave up or was just getting tired towards the end of rounds. Looked really tired at the end of round 2. Benavidez is an awful guy to fight if you get tired, because the dude doesn't get tired. and he's got great sub skills too. So I'm going to go with Benavidez here to give Askarov his first loss.
Yeah, it's a solid pick, definitely. This could be, like you said, this is an advantageous matchup for Benavidez. This isn't a guy who's going to test his chin out after being brutalized his past two fights, and he tends to not lose by submission. Basically, last fight was his only submission loss ever in his career, and that was basically a TKO loss. He got knocked out and then submitted, basically. He got pounded out. So, but I'll stick with Askarov. I don't like taking an older guy who's coming off being brutalized back-to-back fights, but it's a very decent breakdown on Benavidez, and I could definitely see him winning this fight. I think you have very strong feelings on the next fight, so let's get into that. Bantamweight, Song Yadong versus Kyler Phillips. We'll go with Mr. Phillips first. 8-1 as a pro with 5 knockouts, 2-0 in the UFC, 1-0 on the Contender Series. He's won 3 straight fights. He's got 5 inches of reach over his opponent. He also has striking and grappling stats in his favor. And he's at +130 currently. As for Yadong, 16-4, 1-1, 6 knockouts, 3 submissions, 5-0-1 in the UFC, 2 years younger, -160. I think I'm going to go with Yadong in this one.
And I think we're going to go opposite for 3 straight fights.
Oh, yeah?
I'm going to take Kyler Phillips in this one as the underdog. I do like Song Yadong. For the record, I did have him losing that fight to Marlon Vera, which would have put him on a 2-fight losing streak. I think that this is one of those harder fights to call because Kyler Phillips has looked so good in the UFC, and he has fought nobody. You look at his fights, he's fought Cameron Els, and before that he fought Gabriel Silva, and if you want to count his, you know, his Contender Series fight, he fought James Gray, and those are 3 names you've probably never heard before. So, with that being said, you know, like, haven't seen him against the highest level of competition, but I do like the way that his game seems to have evolved since we saw him on The Ultimate Fighter. You know, you saw him on The Ultimate Fighter, he looked like this, like, rangy striker who is lost when it hit the ground. And in his last fight, he looked so good with his takedowns and his top game. And I think when you add the fact that, like, that wrestling has given Song Yadong trouble in the last couple of fights, he's a good offensive wrestler, but lately he hasn't looked like a great defensive wrestler. I think it opens another avenue for Kyler Phillips, who I already thought had an advantage on the feet. So with all that being said, you know, the caveat is definitely in there that this is a hard fight to call because of the level of opponent difference. Once fought Marlon Vera and Cody Stamann. The other one fought Cameron Els and Gabriel Silva. So hard to match those up and hard to weigh that. But, like, at the end of the day, I like how Kyler Phillips seems to be evolving, especially, you know, he's really young guy, too. You know, we're talking about 25-year-old guy. Song Yadong, also young, but the fact of the matter is I've seen more develop out of Kyler Phillips lately, and it seems to be in a way that would be detrimental to Song Yadong.
All right, interesting. Peek behind the curtain, Kyler Phillips and Mario Bautista are both on Top Turtle podcast this week, and Dan picked both of them to win, which I'm sensing a pattern over the years of listening.
I have picked against quite a few of my guests, too, and I feel bad doing it every time, but I picked against Jared Vandera correctly.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I haven't. Maybe that's something I'll have to do the stats on. I haven't broken down all the numbers, so. But that's to break down the numbers for the main event of the prelims, which is a heck of a main event. It's former champ Dominic Cruz in a bantamweight fight against Casey Kenny, bantamweight whose mouth has gotten him into trouble recently, and he's gone on the down low since then. But that has no outcome on the fight at all here. Let's start with Mr. Cruz, whose mouth has gotten him in trouble in the past also. 22-3 for different reasons, but still 22-3 as a pro. 7 knockouts, 1 submission, so you're not going to get many finishes in Dominic Cruz fights. 5-2 in the UFC, which is insane. He's only an all-time great, and he's been in the UFC since 2010. He's only fought 7 times, which is a shame. He's dropped his last 2 fights. He has an inch of reach on Kenny, grappling stats in his favor. He is a slight underdog at -105. As for Kenny, 16-2-1, 1 draw, 2 knockouts, 5 submissions, never been finished in a fight, 5-1 in the UFC, 1-1 on the Contender Series. So it took a couple kicks to the can to get in. He's won 3 straight fights. He's 6 years younger than Cruz, -125. I'll be going with Mr. Kenny in this one.
Yeah, we're finally agreeing again here.
Okay.
I like Casey Kenny too. Man, you mentioned he's got one loss. That is to Mirab Dvalishvili. So it's certainly not a bad loss in there either. The thing about me for this fight is if I was picking this and had any confidence that Dominic Cruz was old Dominic Cruz, I'd pick him. Right? Like, Dominic Cruz in his heyday, Dominic Cruz healthy, you know, rangy, moving, gives Casey Kenney a lot of problems. I just don't think that Dominic Cruz exists anymore. You know, I think that Dominic Cruz is long gone. And if he's hittable in any way, Casey Kenney is going to be in his face hitting him. And I'm not positive that Dominic Cruz even has a wrestling advantage anymore. You know, Casey Kenney has shown in the last couple of fights that he also is a pretty damn talented wrestler. I mean, I love Nathaniel Wood. I think Nathaniel Wood has got a really bright future too. And really, he got out grappled by Casey Kenney, and Casey Kenney poured on the strikes. They both landed more than 120 punches. You know, and Casey Kenney was just barely coming off that fight where he had jacked up Haile Alatang with those body kicks that were brutal. So, yeah, I just think Kenny's output is going to be enough to match that Dominic Cruz. Like, I just throw a lot of punches. His punches are going to look like they impact him more. And just, like, I think ultimately he's going to be fresher, moving better. I will throw that caveat in there. If we do have the Dominic Cruz as of old, he probably comes in here and beats Casey Kenney and makes us all look silly. I just think holding out hope for that is almost a fool's errand here.
Yeah, it's hard. I love WEC so much, and I'm getting against both the WEC guys hard. I don't think there's any other. I think they're just, yeah, Benavidez and Cruz. But got to go with the brain, not with the heart here. So that is just the prelims. But we still have the big main card coming up. And looking over this card, looks like there's no hashtag chunky guys on it.
Just a shame.
Yeah, yeah, which that's one thing the card's lacking. But before we give you your hashtag ad-free main card, which I always like to bring you, let's tell you about one more of our lovely sponsors. This will be Better Edge, B-E-T-T-O-R, Edge. Better Edge allows you to buy and sell betting positions like a stock market. Best part is it allows you to bet with no VIG. Since you're buying positions from other sports bettors, there's no house. So that's you heard that correctly. That's no VIG betting. And it's legal in more than 40 of the U.S. states. It's sports betting without a VIG. You literally can't beat it. So sign up today. Better Edge, B-E-T-T-O-R, edge.com, and use the promo code SGP for a free $10 bet. So B-E-T-T-O-R, edge.com, promo code SGP. And like I always say, promo code SGP will get you many things in life. So always go with that. Let's start with a fight, which basically is a headliner on any fight night card around. A light heavyweight battle between Thiago Santos, Alexander Rakic. Let's start with Santos, former title contender, whose fiance Yana Kuniskaya screwed us over a couple weeks ago by winning her fight. We picked against her, but kudos to her. Santos, 21-8 as a pro, 15 knockouts, one submission. He is 13-7 in the UFC, dropped two straight fights after winning four straight. He has a big, scary hammer type tattoo on his chest, kind of Brock Lesnar.
Only rivaled by Brock Lesnar's.
Yes. He is plus 135 in this one. Rakic, 13-2 as a pro, 9 knockouts, 1 submission, 5-1 in the UFC, won his last fight before dropping his only UFC loss was the fight before that. Is what I'm trying to spit out here. 2 inches taller, 2 inches of reach, 8 years younger, striking and grappling stats in his favor, minus 165. I will be riding with him.
Yeah, I'm gonna ride with Rakic here. I think the thing for me in this fight is, first of all, you know, people really high on Santos after the John Jones fight. But remember, not a lot of guys at light heavyweight are going to give him the same kind of fight as John Jones gave him, right? John Jones wanted to play like an outside striking game. It allowed Thiago Santos to like find his range and look for his big shot and all that kind of stuff. He's not going to get that fight with somebody like Rakic. Rakic is going to get in his face and make him make decisions early. And I mean, if you look back at Thiago Santos's record, Thiago Santos notoriously does not do particularly well early in fights. You know, it takes him to the second or third round to sort of figure things out, because he does need to learn about range and he does need to feel out his opponent. And I just think Rancic is not the type of guy who lets you feel it out. It's also worth noting, you know, like Glover Teixeira kind of built a game plan to beat Thiago Santos, you know, put that man on his back and make him work off of his back. And Rancic, you know, despite being a guy who comes from a Muay Thai background, has showed he has surprisingly good wrestling in multiple fights. You know, the Ledet fight sticks out to me, is showing some really good wrestling, but like, you know, he's shown it time and time again. So I think he's got multiple avenues to victory. I actually think that this is a decent fight to hashtag throw in a parlay if you want, because the number is, you know, I think safe, but also not crazy tempting in its own right. So I like Rancic here. And like I said, I like it probably if you're boosting it with somebody else.
All right, there you go. We got one of our hashtags in. No chunky guys, but we got to throw them in a parlay. Lightweights, Islam Makhachev versus Drew Dober. Dober, 23-9 with one no contest, 10 knockouts, 6 submissions, 9-5 in the UFC, 9-5, one no contest in the UFC. He's won 3 straight fights, all via a form of KO / TKO. 6-1, so he's won 6 of his last 7, that would mean, by my math, he's at plus 255 on this one. Sizable underdog. Because Makhachev is quite a beast. He's 18-1 as a pro. 3 knockouts, 7 submissions, 7-1 in the UFC. He's won 6 straight fights. Of note, he hasn't fought since September 2019, so it's quite a layoff for him. He was suspended for a while. Has he been back from suspension? Yeah, he's been back since then, I think, but he was suspended ages ago. 2 inches taller, 3 years younger, striking and grappling stats in his favor. He's at minus 330. I'm going with him because he's a monster.
Yeah, not only is he a monster, too. I mean, like, the big thing is I think Drew Dober's very good. I think that this is a nightmare matchup for him, right? Islam Makhachev is what we think of when we think of that classic Russian fighter, loves the takedowns, quite good at them, gets them in droves. And we're talking about Drew Dober, a guy who just conceded 3 takedowns to Alexander Hernandez, who just showed, you know, maybe he's not the greatest offensive wrestler in the history of mankind, nor is he the greatest tactician. So for him to have taken Dober down that many times without me really feeling very confident in his offensive grappling, I don't have a lot of faith in the fact that Dober stays off of his back for more than 5 minutes in this fight. So unless he lands the big hammer, this is Makhachev's fight, and it's Makhachev's fight fairly easily.
Yep. Of note, they were supposed to fight 5 years ago, and then Makhachev failed a drug test. So they've been around for a while, and they're finally actually going to fight 5 years later. Rest of the card is only title fights. How crazy is that? We'll start with the men's bantamweight title fight. New champ Petr Yan versus Aljamain Sterling. Sterling finally getting his long-awaited title shot. He's 19-3 with 2 knockouts, 8 submissions. He's 11-3 in the UFC. He's been around forever. He's won 5 straight fights. He's got 4 inches of reach and the striking stats in his favor. He's a very slight plus 100 underdog to the champ. Yan is 15-1, 7 knockouts, 1 submission. Never been finished in his one loss. He was it was via decision. 7-0 in the UFC. He's won 10 straight fights. 4 years younger, minus 130. I'm going to stick with the champ in this one. I'm thinking you might take Sterling. What are your thoughts?
I am 100% going to take Sterling.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah. And
I know you so well.
I think we also probably talked about this when we talked about like the beginning of the year when we were breaking down some of the odds that were going to be coming. But for me, the difference maker in this is that I do think Aljamain Sterling is a far better grappler. I also think people underestimate how good Aljamain Sterling uses range on his feet. Because, yes, Petr Yan does a very good job of striking. He's got some phenomenal striking numbers. But, like, let's look at the fact that Aljamain Sterling not only landed 100 punches on Jimmy Rivera, but he limited Jimmy Rivera to landing 24. Jimmy Rivera just landed more than that on Pedro Munhoz with one leg, you know, and he landed 2 or 3 times as many of that on Pedro Munhoz with one leg. Aljamain Sterling then put almost 200 punches on Pedro Munhoz, again, with Pedro Munhoz landing about half that. So we're talking about a guy who does a phenomenal job of all of that while also probably being the best grappler in the division. And I think that that's worth noting, too, about just how good he is at grappling. It's also worth mentioning that, you know, when we go back and we look at Petr Yan's record, if you're looking for the best fighter that Peter Yan has fought in his UFC career, the answer is probably Jimmy Rivera, right? Like, he has not fought a murder's row of people to get to the UFC title. You know, he fought Jin Su Chu and Teruto Ishihara and Douglas Andrade, John Dodson, and Jimmy Rivera, and then had a title shot. Like, that is his path to the title. And it's not impressive after that either, with Uriah Faber and Jose Aldo both over the hill. I'm not impressed by his resume. And did he look good in those fights? Yeah, but, like, you should. If you're anywhere near the top of the division, you should. Aljamain Sterling beat the hell out of Jimmy Rivera, who is his best win, and arguably did it better than Peter Yan. I think Jimmy Rivera, having fought the gauntlet of the toughest guys in the division, first of all, that gives him an experience leg up. And second of all, I think that grappling difference is going to be so clear here, because Yan has used his grappling offensively quite well in his career, and I don't think he has the ability to mix it up here.
It's, yeah, very persuasive breakdown. I'm not going to be a flip-flopper, but I could definitely see Sterling winning. That's basically why the odds are so close, and it would be fun, actually, to have him be the champ. But I'll stick with the chalk, and Dan is picking the first new champion crowned on this night. I'm guessing the next fight he's not going to do the same. Because that would be a women's featherweight fight against the best women's fighter of all, with the best women's fighter of all time, Amanda Nunes versus Megan Anderson. Let's talk about Anderson. 11-4 as a pro, 6 knockouts, 3 submissions, 3-2 in the UFC, but she's won 2 straight fights. That's what's gotten her into this title fight. Also, with the fact there's about, 3 or 4 true women featherweight on the whole roster. Yeah, exactly. She has been out of action for over a year. It was February 2020 when she last fought. She will be 4 inches taller, 3 inches of reach. So that will be something Nunes probably is not accustomed to, fighting someone that is actually bigger than her. She's also 2 years younger. She's at plus 750 in this fight, though. So I don't think any of that size is going to matter, because Nunes definitely has the strength advantage in that. Nunes, 22-4, 13 knockouts, 3 submissions, 13-1 in the UFC, 11 straight wins. She's been, stopped once. She got TKO'd in 2015. That was the only time she's been stopped in a fight, I believe. Striking grappling stats in her favor, minus 1,100. She's the obvious pick, but unless you're going to put her in a whole bunch of different parlays, there's really no reason to go anywhere near this fight. Unless, I guess, stoppage, she could probably get a little bit better number, but not greatly.
Yeah.
Not worth betting, probably.
Yeah, I just looked. The submission line is maybe the most tempting. That's about plus 180. I'm still not sure I'd like that, because I do expect her to win this by TKO. And that's, you're still finding that at like negative 400. And even that's not really tempting to me to throw in parlays, because I think there's a chance that Megan Anderson stays safe enough here to make it to 5-round decision. I think it's probably not likely. The problem for me here for Megan Anderson is, yes, she does have power in her hands, but she's also shown a little bit of a weakness when it comes to grappling. And Amanda Nunes, if anything, has shown her willingness to do what she needs to do to beat her opponent. She's not one of those fighters who's like, I'm going to go out there and just do me, and then whoever steps in won't be able to deal with that. She adapts incredibly well. It reminds me a lot of the game plans of Alexander Volkanovski. She is fine with just completely changing herself into a different person because she can, and it's what would make the win the easiest as possible. And I think what you're going to see here, this fight will be on the feet for 5 seconds before Amanda Nunes gets in on those legs, is in full mount, and is just pounding away at Megan Anderson until this is over. So I think this is quick. If you are looking to put some money down on it, I would suggest not taking your $100 and putting it on a negative 1400 line or whatever the heck you said it was. It'll probably be negative 2000 by fight time. So I would suggest not doing that. Maybe pick a round you think she might finish it in. That might be a little bit more fun. But ultimately, yeah, the right pick here, regardless of what these odds look like, is Amanda Nunes.
It sounds like from your breakdown, you're thinking, and I'm agreeing, TKO round 1 might be a good a good pick here.
I think so, but again, like I said, like so Nunes is really smart when it comes to game planning. You know, Megan Anderson, right. In my opinion, her only route to victory here is a knockout. It is if she throws the big blow and lands. So I expect Amanda Nunes not to fight that game. Of course, I could have the wrong read here. She trains an American top team. Those coaches are 40 times smarter than I am, at least. They might see some weakness in the way that, you know, Megan Anderson strikes, and it fits perfectly with Amanda Nunes' game. And the easiest thing to do is to just go in there and crack her on the chin once. So, you know, maybe they play that game and she survives for a little bit until Nunes lands that bomb. But, yeah, like, if you're looking for something that might be fun to play, yeah, maybe Amanda Nunes round one. Amanda Nunes round two is plus 300. Maybe you think Anderson survives for 5 minutes. That's probably the best use of your $100. But ultimately, the best use of your $100 is to just stay away from this fight.
Yep, no doubt. Keep it in your pocket. And let's go to a champ versus – let's finish this off with a champ versus champ fight. Why not? As if this card doesn't have enough on it already. It will be a light heavyweight title fight between the light heavyweight champ and the middleweight champ. Light heavyweight champ would be the newly crowned Jan Błachowicz. He is 27-8 with 8 knockouts and 9 submissions, 10-5 in the UFC. He's won 4 straight fights, but he will be plus 200 underdog against the middleweight champ, Israel Adesanya, who is moving up to light heavyweight for the first time in his MMA career, or his pro MMA career at least. And kickboxing, basically, he was at least his last few fights were basically around the middleweight weight limit too. So this will definitely be a step up in weight for him, and it sounds like he's not looking to put on extra weight. He's just not going to do much of a weight cut. So he basically walks around the 205 limit. So whether that will be successful or not, we'll have to wait and see. He is 20-0 as a pro, 15 knockouts, 9-0 in the UFC, 2 inches taller and 2 inches of reach, 6 years younger. Striking stats in his favor, minus 255. And I am picking a new champion in this one. Adesanya will become double champ after Saturday night.
Yeah, I agree with you on this one. You want to see the light heavyweight division move forward, right? Like you want to see,
right.
If Adesanya wins, what's going to happen? Is he going to defend this title ever? Is he going back to middleweight? Is he going to abandon middleweight? You know, like I notoriously have hated these champ super fights for so long, and I want to say that I want Jan Błachowicz to win because I want him to fight Glover Teixeira and I want Glover to get that shot. It's not going to happen. Like Israel Adesanya is so flashy on the feet and he is so good at staying elusive, and if he's too fast for Robert Whittaker, he's too fast for Jan Błachowicz. If he's too elusive for those guys down at middleweight, he is 100% too elusive for Jan Błachowicz. And yes, Jan Błachowicz looked great knocking out Dominic Reyes, but, you know, Dominic Reyes had not fought like a murderer's row of dangerous, heavy-handed strikers before, whereas Israel Adesanya has fought some really dangerous strikers. So, I mean, like, I think that this is a pretty clear stylistic matchup where, while some people might want to say Jan Błachowicz has got the size advantage, Jan Błachowicz has fought at this heavier weight class, Izzy's got the reach. Izzy's got the speed. Izzy fights a rangy style, which is, you know, designed to stay away from power punchers. Like, it's just an awful matchup for the champ. And it's sad to think that there's a pretty high probability that his title reign is going to last 0 total fights. But I think that's what happens. And what's really interesting to this to me is I thought the reason they wanted Izzy at 205 here was to set up the John Jones match. Have you seen John Jones lately?
Yeah, he's like 250 pounds or something now.
He looks like his brothers. Like he looks like Chandler Jones, like or even Arthur Jones. Like he looks like, you know, like he's a tank. So there's no way he's going back to 205. So I guess the only way that happens is mucking up a third division if it comes down to it. Which, man, it's so disheartening to like both love Israel Adesanya, love that he's gonna be a superstar, and hate the fact that this is probably going to be the way that all of these divisions get tied up.
Right. Yeah. If and when he wins, which we're predicting he does, hopefully they won't, because they've never in the past, but hopefully they make a quick decision as to him dropping one of the belts.
But the problem with that, though, too, is they already have a middleweight fight booked between the two contenders. You know, like Paulo Borrachina.
Whitaker and Costa.
Yeah, Costa is fighting Whitaker. So, like, if he was planning on dropping middleweight, like, they could have announced that fight afterwards and put the title on the line. It seems like he's not planning on doing that. It seems like they want him to hold both so that when he goes to fight John Jones at heavyweight, they can say champ champ versus champ champ in the first guy ever to chase three belts at the same time.
Right. Yeah, it's a shame, but he's a fun fighter, and so and he's basically going up against a journeyman. With total respect to him for making himself a UFC champion, but he's 10-5 in the UFC. He's basically a journeyman fighter who's got hot at the right time in the right division.
He's the Michael Bisping of light heavyweight.
Yeah, exactly. No disrespect, obviously, even after we've disrespected him totally there. Now, well, we spoke about a few props and parlays we like. We're thinking if you want to play Nunes and play her via stoppage in one of the early rounds, any others that you like here? You mentioned the submission one, I think, earlier on. Did you not? Or maybe not?
Yeah. Not this week. I actually think that I'm a pretty big fan of the idea that Tim Elliott comes out with a submission.
Okay.
Yeah. So if you're looking for a prop, I do like Tim Elliott by submission. You can make that line a little juicier that way. I also think if you're gonna play Carlos Ullberg against Kennedy Zuchuku, like the -200 line, I don't think is bad to start with Ullberg. But like, I also think the probability of if he wins, it is much more likely he wins by knockout. And so I think I would get all over that. And, you know, I don't mean to throw prop after prop after prop at people, but I also think, you know, taking Ursos Medic by knockout is a smart move. You know, Cruz is coming off of just being knocked out. Medic is a finisher. Medic has got crazy pressure. So, again, I like the -170-ish line you're seeing him at. But in addition to that, I think he probably goes in there and knocks him out as well.
All right, there you go. And you mentioned some parlays already, so we don't really have to go into those. You mentioned some hashtag throw them in a parlay during the broadcast already. Now, we started picking lock picks last week, and both of our lock picks fell through. They didn't even fight.
We're both 0-0.
exactly. We're perfect in this one. Now, I had first pick last week, so let's give you first pick this week. Do you have a lock pick for us?
Absolutely. So my lock pick is going to be Alexander Rejcic. You know, when I'm picking these lock picks, I don't want to tell you that, you know, and this should be your pick if you've only got $100, and you can't bet $100 on every fight. Which one do you go and you get that win for sure? I don't want to send you to somebody who's not going to give you any return. I don't want to send you to somebody who, you know, you're going to get $33 on your $100 bet. But I do want to give you somebody who I know is going to win. And I think Rejcic is that guy. You know, a -155, -160, depending on your book. You know, he's going to get you like a $65 return for your $100. I think, you know, the path to victory for him against Santos, there's 100 of them. I think he could wrestle him. I think he could knock him out early. I think he could, you know, stand and bang with him for three rounds. And I just think, too, the speed that he's going to force Santos to deal with and get in his face is going to make it so Santos can't figure him out. So, yeah, my lock is going to be Alexander Rejcic.
All right, I am going for a guy in the similar betting range in Uros Medic.
That was actually going to be my other one. I had it down to those two.
Yeah, there you go. Yep. So he's at -170 against Alan Cruz. If you want to even spice it up, you can pick him via knockout. Cruz has been knocked out before. Cruz has been out for over a year, and he's lost his UFC debut. So I think a lot of things are adding up for the doctor to win this one. So he will be my lock pick. So we got Rejcic and Medic going with the Europeans in this on this card. So which means both those guys' fights will fall through before Saturday rolls
That's
around.
That's what we're actually predicting with our locks of the night, by the way. These are the locks to definitely not have getting a chance to fight on Saturday.
Exactly. Anything else we need to say other than this should be a pretty awesome fight card?
Yeah, no, I'm excited for it, and especially with, you know, you said already, a lot of flyweight fights on it, which is super exciting. Yeah. And, you know, how often do you get to see two former, you know, title challengers or title winners even in Dominic Cruz fighting on the prelims like this. So yeah, this is this is probably my number one can't miss card of the year.
Yeah, and I'm hoping we don't have a whole bunch of decisions like we did last week, or this is going to be a super, super long card, because there's a lot of fights on it, and then there's 3 5-round fights to top off the card. So this could be very, and the main card's not starting until 10 Eastern, so this could be a very, very long evening if Megan Anderson doesn't end things quick and other people do the same.
Yeah, it would be, and you said the prelims start at 6 too. If they're going to fit all of those prelims in before the main card at 10, we must be in line for some pretty nice pacing, or else we're going to be in trouble.
Hopefully. All right. Hopefully our picks didn't get you in trouble, or don't get you in trouble. That was like a Shockwave Dave transition I did there, wasn't it? He always does stuff like that.
Yeah. He's the king of the king of the fancy transition like that.
Exactly. I'm getting the hang of this 18 episodes then. Make sure you listen to Shockwave Dave and Dan every week on Top Turtle MMA. Like I said, this week they'll be speaking with Mario Bautista and Kyler Phillips, who a couple guys are fighting on this week's fight card. Make sure you also listen to his prelim picker. Whoever his guest is this week will have different ideas on who they like in the prelims to give you a different perspective on things. Make sure you check out all the work on MMA-manifesto.com and, of course, on sportsgamblingpodcast.com and over on Twitter. Make sure you follow me. I'm up to like 920, so I'm getting there. I want to get over 1,000, and then I can be in the same, I guess it's not even the same ballpark as Dan. So Dan's over 3,000 for some reason. There must be nudes on his Twitter feed that I haven't seen. There's got to be nudes. But anyhow, he's at Gumby, at Gumby Vreeland. I'm at Jeff Fox Writer, WRITER. So make sure you follow both of us. And we'll be back next week to tell you how we did on – we have quite a few different picks this week. So one of us probably will be happy next week, and one of us will not be quite so happy. So we will tell you how we did, and we'll break down we'll be up to Edwards versus Muhammad. Remember the name, Bilal Muhammad. We'll be headlining card March 13th. So until that time, though, I bid you farewell, and thank you for listening.
Completely forgot that Bilal Muhammad was the main event next week.
How could you forget his name?
I forgot the name.
You're supposed to remember the name.